Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Babies, toddlers, mesmerized by technology, by screens, grabbing for smartphones, tablets, plopped in front of TVs. Now an entire TV network, Baby First TV, says, bring us the little ones. But what is actually a good idea in our age of screens everywhere? This hour On Point, babies, toddlers, and screen time. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you firing up the screens for your toddler, your infant? Do you feel guilty about it? Glad it's there? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Baby First TV, cable network, out making a big surge these days. Here's a little bit of tape from their character Mitten the Kitten, dancing and singing the classic kids song, Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes.
Head, shoulders, knees, and toes, knees, and toes.
Okay, it's a gas. Joining me today from Beverly Hills, California's Joe Flint, media reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He recently wrote, It's Really Here, TV for Babies, looking at cable's Baby First TV programming just for babies 24/7. Joe Flint, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
How big is this company? How big is its push? How many households or people have signed up for it?
Well, it's a small company, actually. It's an independent cable network, which in our industry, in today's media environment, is kind of rare. They are just past the 50 million home mark, which is an important step for any network trying to gain traction. They've been around for a while, but their distribution was very limited, and they've recently added Time Warner Cable and some other cable operators, so they're growing. But it's a very small outfit, a very low-budget outfit.
Say, we've heard of couch potatoes, now come crib potatoes. What's the product that Baby First TV is offering?
Basically, it's primarily geared for 6 month to 4 year olds. It's very rudimentary programming. Count shows about counting, shows about colors. They don't necessarily label themselves as educational in the sense that we'll make your kids smarter, because that's a fine line to walk with the FTC and other places. But they are trying to put out programming that they believe is positive and helpful to a child's development, not necessarily looking to sell merchandise, which is, of course, the great fear of programming younger and younger.
Is it for the kids? Is it animation? Is it video of horses running around? What is it for the adults?
It's all of the above. There's animation there. There's live action programming, action being an operative word, but we'll just say, you know, programming with actual people. There's animation. There's a mix. It's all of those things. I've watched some of it. I am not a parent. Basically, not exactly. Didn't keep me riveted to the TV. But to your point about the moms, that's where the story gets more interesting. From a business sense, they are going after the moms who are with their babies at this time of the day, watching them. And what advertising there is on the channel is more aimed to mothers, not to kids.
What do they say about the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendation? As you say, recommends no television for children under the age of two. They argue that children learn best by interacting with humans, not screens. What does Baby First TV say about that?
I don't think that Sharon or Guy, the founders of the channel, would debate that your children should interact with humans and learn from watching people. But I think their other thought is it's simply unrealistic to believe that kids aren't going to be exposed to television. So their argument is, if they are going to be exposed, let's at least try to make the product wholesome and good for them. That's sort of where they're coming from on this front.
And in the media world, is this seen as a growth front? Infant television, toddler TV?
Well, that's what remains to be seen. There are advertisers certainly interested in what Baby First is trying to do, and now that they're past the 50 million mark, they will get a closer look from advertisers. They haven't been measured by Nielsen, the rating service, as of yet. That's going to start in the third quarter of this year, which will, of course, give advertisers some real numbers to look at to see what the channel's doing. The media industry in general is becoming more and more niche. There are channels aimed at every demographic and every lifestyle out there. So this, in a sense, is that natural extension. And I will say, in the Academy of Pediatrics, I sent them some programming from Baby First TV to look at before I interviewed them. I just thought, give it a look-see. And what they came back with, they said, well, a lot of it is probably too, for really young, 6 month or a 1 year old, it's going to fly over a kid's head. Muzak for babies is what Dr. Ari Brown described it as. But she also said, half jokingly, but that it won't turn your kid into an axe murderer either.
That's a pretty low bar, Joe. That's a pretty low bar.
Well, right. I don't know if it makes for a good marketing promotion angle. But
won't turn your kid into an axe murderer. Great.
Right.
Oh boy!
But yes, I mean, I think it's interesting, and there are lots of debates to be had about when kids should be exposed to screens. I don't think anyone wants to see kids parked in front of a TV 8 hours a day. Having said that, I think in today's world, it's probably a little unrealistic to think that they won't ever be exposed to it. It's just finding that balance and what they are being exposed to. And again, I'm just a media business reporter, so I'm in no means an expert on any of this.
Well, we appreciate your reporting on the business. They, of course, must see an opportunity here. Joe Flint, media reporter for the Wall Street Journal, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Here's another little bit. Baby First TV videos on YouTube here featuring the Color Crew, animated crayon characters that teach the names of basic colors. Well, to your, I guess, baby.
Just one of us to lead the game. So gather round, now stake your claim and see who gets the hat.
Oh, boy, I don't know how much of that a baby picks up. Let's ask. Joining me now from Austin, Texas, Dr. Ari Brown, pediatrician, lead author of Media Use for Children Under 2 Years Old. That was the big 2011 report from the American Academy of Pediatrics that discouraged TV for kids under 2. That is their standing recommendation. Dr. Ari Brown, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
So you just heard that little bit that we did there about the Color Crew and so on. Can a baby relate to that? Are they going to learn their colors from a jingle and prancing stuff on a TV screen?
No. So in short, no. There are a couple of things here. One is, what an expectation of who should be learning their colors. We expect 4-year-olds to know 4 colors. That's the developmental milestone. A lot of kids, somewhere between the age 2 and 4 will learn their colors. A 6-month-old, we do not expect them to learn their colors. So that's one thing that you really kind of have to look at when you're looking at something that's supposed to be promoting child development, is what should you expect a child to be able to understand? But the other piece, which is really kind of the big piece here that we're talking about, is what can a child learn from a passive video presentation, which is what a TV program is. But now we kind of don't call it a TV program because kids can watch it on a lot of different forms, whatever screen is available. But here's the thing, is that there is a kind of great cognitive divide on how young children learn and how their brains work. And so in the youngest age group, we kind of put the divide at age 2, but somewhere between 18 and 30 months is when this big divide happens. Kids under 18 months of age, no question, learn best from real people and real things. They're very tactile learners. And so the video presentation gets lost in translation. They do not know how to interpret these things. And so if you look at some really interesting studies where they put, 12-month-olds and 15-month-olds in front of a Teletubbies program, and they played it forwards and backwards, the kids laughed whether it was played forwards or backwards, because, heck, it's entertaining. It's funny that the, you know, there's images yeah. and there's music and stuff. And so, you know, entertaining, yes. I mean, there's no question that a baby will be engaged, in fact, glued to a screen if you turn a screen on. But do they get the concept? No, because they don't even understand if it's going forwards or backwards. So it really takes a child over at least 18 months. And so, you know, when we put our policy statement together, we really had to look at all comers and the normal developmental milestones. Somewhere around age two is when kids actually get it. And they can learn something from a program that's televised. So so another great study is on Sesame Street, which we know is an educational program. It promotes language skills. It promotes social skills. So it's kind of, you know, if you're looking at a gold standard program that is educational, really great for kids over age two who get it. Kids who are under age two who are watching Sesame Street, actually, studies have shown that their language development is delayed compared to their peers. And it's not because Sesame Street is bad. It's because they're watching TV instead of doing something else.
So parents may think, I mean, you say they can't learn until they're four colors by the time they're four. Maybe parents think, well, if I show them this when they're 4 months, they'll be very advanced.
Well, you know, it's always good to, you know, take teaching moments. And if you're stacking blocks and sorting blocks, you can say, let's put the yellow ones over there and let's put the red ones over there. And sure, you know, you can work with your child and help them learn their colors in an appropriate environment. But again, a live presentation where you're sitting there with your child is going to be much more effective than watching a yellow banana and a yellow sun and them singing a song saying this is the color yellow. In this age group, they won't get it.
Keep it real, says Dr. Ari Brown. Real objects, real things, real human interaction. And yet there are screens everywhere in our world these days and many infants and toddlers looking at them. Dr. Brown, in Austin, Texas, please stand by there. It's great to have you with us. The lead author of Media Use for Children Under 2 Years Old, the big American Academy of Pediatrics report out a couple of years ago. Behind us here, a little Baby Einstein, Baby Mozart video. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about screen time for babies and toddlers, TV, apps, video, online games. It seems like everybody's doing more and more of it, but what's actually okay or good or not? Baby TV network coming out, really being pushed. Here's a clip from Baby TV, a baby and a toddler network from Fox. Oliver, a cartoon monkey, feeds farm animals.
Oh, the cow is hungry. Very good. The cow likes to eat hay. Aha! The sheep is hungry as well.
From Baby TV from Fox, as opposed to Baby First TV, Dr. Ari Brown is with us from Austin, Texas, author of Baby 411, Toddler 411. She's got the lowdown. She was the lead author as well on the American Academy of Pediatrics report out a couple of years ago, saying, no, really discouraging screen time for very young. We're going to hear more voices, but we've got a lot of callers for you. Let me just get a few right here. Rafi in Boston, you're on the air. Thank you for calling, Rafi.
Yeah, thanks. Great to meet you. We have four kids from 9 years to 9 months, and we did an experiment in the last few months where we were very sort of screen dependent and said, what if we just took away screens almost all week? And we've now done that for 6 days, and on Saturday night and Sunday, they can have screens. And the key point that I would say is it seems like it's not so much about the content that's on TV, but about the opportunity cost of kids not doing other things. And we've seen just this unbelievable flourishing, almost starting in 24 hours of experiment, where they were drawing and writing and building things.
Rafi, the phone line is so bad, but I think I've got the gist of it, and I appreciate your call. Ari Brown, four kids, 9 months to 9 years, and they cut the screen time back to something, maybe one... watching on one day a week, and Rafi seems pretty happy about it. Is that realistic these days? Is that your prescription?
So I think that's a great experiment, and it demonstrates that, wow, what you can do when you don't have a screen on. And I think that we all, including parents, kind of get used to being in front of a screen, whether it's a computer screen or it's a TV. And so I agree. He commented about opportunity cost, and that's really a great way of phrasing it. You know, what I would say is it time well spent, and what else could you be doing? And so when it comes to the youngest kids, we have two big concerns. One is the value of independent, unstructured playtime. And, you know, when you're busy, and this is why a lot of times the parents do turn on a TV, is to keep a child occupied while they're cooking dinner or trying to take a shower. And, you know, where's the harm done? Well, you know, you're right. It's not that the content is so harmful. It's that when you are cooking dinner and your child is playing in the living room, you are more likely to be talking to that child. And it seems so insignificant. You're just kind of chattering, hey, what are you doing over there? And, you know, what are you building? And what are you drawing? And that talk time is so powerful. That's why the kids have language delays, is because the talk time between the parent and the child is what's not happening. Plus, that independent playtime is so critical that the little kids do need that. And you're right that older kids, you know, you need to have screen time in moderation. So the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends having a media management plan, kind of, you know, just like you would have a healthy diet that you would plan for your child and meal planning, you know, you're going to have a healthy media diet. So we recommend, you know, no more than 2 hours of recreational screen time for kids over age two, because we know a lot of kids are using iPads now at school and using computers to do their homework. We know that. But 2 hours beyond that is plenty of time to do everything and then get other things done.
2 hours per what? Per day? Per week?
2 hours a day. Two hours a day.
For what age?
Over age two.
Oh, for over. But we're really focused here on infants and toddlers, and you're saying under that, just leave it aside. Give them the blocks, talk to them. Never mind.
Right. And one of the things that, you know, that I am very, it's important to point out is that the policy statement that we have right now for kids under age two is really directed at passive screen time. So we don't have a policy statement on interactive media. This is specifically directed at video presentation on whatever screen it's on. And because it's not an educational experience and it displaces other time and other, you know, and other important things your child could be doing. But that is what the policy statement says currently is about passive screen time.
So you weren't into apps and interactive digital at that time.
You know, this is the thing, is technology moves a lot faster than science. And so, you know, as our policy statement was coming out, the first generation iPad came out, and then all the apps came out, and now there's an explosion of things that are really targeted to this younger age group, 0 to 2. And so now the American Academy of Pediatrics is coming back to look at those issues now that we are going to have some research, because we don't make any policy statements without evidence to back it up. So that's the next big question.
There's thinking going on here already. Ari Brown, standby in Austin. In Seattle, Washington, Dr. Dimitri Christakis joins us. He was also an author on that big American Academy of Pediatrics report from 2011. He's director of the Center for Child Health, Behavior, and Development at Seattle Children's Hospital, did a TED Talk on media and children fairly open to apps, I think. Dr. Christakis, thank you for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here.
What about apps and interactive digital screens for infants and toddlers, let's say under two?
Well, Dr. Brown is correct that the research on these particular devices is still emerging, and it's frankly in its infancy. But there are a lot of theoretical reasons, I think, that we need to recognize that not all screens are the same. And the same way we, for years, talked about television monolithically as if it were a single entity, we now talk about all screens and talk about screen time as if it's all the same. And it's not. The truth is that content drives the experience. So let's take an example that I think everybody would say is fine. Rather than talk about apps, let's begin by talking about Skype. So would we put a prohibition on an 18-month-old Skyping with their grandparent or with their parent who might be serving in Afghanistan? I think everybody, including everyone in the American Academy of Pediatrics, would say there's nothing wrong with that. So the moment we say that not all screens are the same and not all experiences on the screen are the same, we're left with a very difficult task of deciding where do we draw the line. And because we don't have a lot of evidence at present, we need to rely on our theoretical understanding of how screens negatively impact children. And as Dr. Brown said before, one of the critical parts is the passivity, Because the one thing that a child never says or a pre-verbal child never thinks when they're watching television is, I did it. Because, in fact, they're doing nothing. They're just sitting there. And that's very, very different from what happens when children engage with apps. The other thing I'll point out, because you've played many clips during this radio broadcast of videos, but of course we're on radio, so there's no visual component to it. And I would urge your listeners to see, not just listen to these clips, because one of the things we know about programming that's targeting very young infants is that it's incredibly rapidly sequenced. That's part of how young children are kept engaged in the screen. In fact, the pacing is surreal, and it's much faster than any programming aimed at older children and adults.
Is that a positive or a negative?
No, that's a negative. That's one of the significant negatives. In research that we've done, we found that this rapid pacing during that critical period of brain development leads to shorter attention spans later in life. The theoretical basis for that is that you overstimulate the developing brain, and you precondition it to expect this high level of input, and then reality happens too slowly, and you're bored by the pacing of real life. Think of it this way. Our brains evolved over millennia to process things that happened in our world, and everything that happens in our world, by definition, happens in real time. That changed, really, only with the advent of media, which made it possible for things to happen faster than they do in the real world. But early television programs didn't even do that. They typically took place in real time. They were live action or talk shows, etc. But recently, starting about 20, 30 years ago, the pacing of programs really picked up. And in the case of infants, it's incredibly fast. So that's part of what is damaging about children watching television. It's the pacing of the programming. And that brings me back to Skype, and it brings me back to apps, because those sorts of experiences don't have to be extremely rapidly sequenced. And again, I don't want to be monolithic myself. When I talk about apps, not all apps are the same. And so we shouldn't ask the question, is it okay for baby to play with apps? Some apps are no different than just passively watching a TV program. And clearly those would be more like a television show than a plaything. But some apps are, in fact, very much like toys. Consider an app that is basically a virtual Etch-a-Sketch, which exists on an iPad. Children engage it in much the same way as they do an Etch-a-Sketch. It's not exactly the same, but it's very close. So if you ask me, would I say that's damaging, or do I have a hypothesis that that's damaging, I would say no. But I do caution parents, because I think that I did it response is incredibly gratifying for children. I mean, they experience it many times in the real world, and they have the opportunity to experience it as often as they want with an app. And the one concern I do have is that these things can, in fact, be addictive for young children, even for adults. But we're talking about infants now.
Dr. Christakis, please stand by in Seattle. And Dr. Ari Brown in Austin, Texas. Diane Levin joins me now in the studio here in Boston, professor of early childhood development at Wheelock College, author of Beyond Remote Controlled Childhood, Teaching Young Children in the Digital Age. Diane Levin, it's so great to have you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
So I'm listening along with all of our listeners. Dr. Brown says for infants, maybe even toddlers, objects are better because they relate directly to things. Pick them up, manipulate them, sit them down with blocks. Everybody's agreeing so far, passive TV viewing, not great. And the pace of things, the addictive quality, the attention span issues. But you hear Dr. Christakis saying some apps, if they're nice and slow and you can do it yourself, may be all right. Well, how soon? I mean, if infants don't even relate to these screen visual representations, is that as good as playing with the blocks? Is it good?
Right. A couple of things that are important here. One is a parent shouldn't need a PhD in child development to make these decisions about what's okay and what isn't.
Though they're deluged
right.
today with screens and so.
But parents are deluged with all this information that starting at birth, this screen will make your baby smart, that app will make your baby smart. And I think we're making it harder and harder and harder for parents to make good decisions and know what to do. So when we say, yes, this can be appropriate if it's used this way, this way, and this way, I wouldn't argue with everything that's said about what could and could not be appropriate, but it's very, very hard. Secondly, even when we find something appropriate, it can become extremely hard to manage it and control it. It is very addictive, as we heard. The more you have, the more you want. The real world can seem very boring, where when you push a button, all kinds of things happen. And so you want more and more and more of that. And I've talked to hundreds of parents who talk about, well, I just started with a little, but now it's completely out of control and I don't know what to do. And I can't make dinner without it anymore because my kid needs it. So we need to think about the long-term effects of starting young. So there are many issues in terms of parenting today. What are ways to parent that help parents do a good job? What are things that make it harder for them? And those are the kinds of questions I feel we need to look at as we think about all these other littler points.
Let's get a call from Bellevue, Nebraska. Carrie is calling. Hi, Carrie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I agree with so much of what was being said today. I am a developmental optometrist. That means we're interested in the way children's vision develops over a lifetime. And the more 3D time kids have, the more real space time they have, where they're manipulating things in space, going back and forth, crawling, climbing, moving. That's what we want for children's vision development, not time in front of a screen. And I love that term, opportunity cost. I'm going to be using that with my patients all the time now.
So you actually think that a child's vision could be, vision development could be harmed by too much screen time as opposed to 3D real world objects and depth field?
Yes. Yes.
That's fascinating. I appreciate your call, Carrie, from Nebraska. Dr. Brown in Austin, Texas. I mean, here, Dimitri Christakis is stepping up for apps, but apps are still on that two-dimensional screen. You hear our doctor's concern from Nebraska that vision itself could be challenged.
Yeah, I would have to see that. I have not seen any data on that. That would be my comment. I agree that fast-paced images, certainly, and I've seen Dimitri's TED Talk, and he's got some great images of his little mice that are running around in mazes, and he can tell you about it. You know, the thing is there is a concern on it. We do have kind of this plasticity of the brain, and so the things that our kids are exposed to early in life can certainly have an influence on brain development. Specifically regarding to vision, I can't speak to that.
But Diane, make it simple. You say parents are overwhelmed with advice, but I think some simple guidelines on screens for toddlers and infants would be very welcome.
Well, I think my advice would be as little as possible, as long as possible, helping them get engaged in real-world things as long as possible, that being aware that developing their own, I like to think of developing their own programs, you know, a baby who learns how to chew on its toe to self-comfort and starts chewing fast on its toe and starts laughing and learns that when they want to laugh, they can chew on their toe and laugh and then suddenly chews too hard and starts to cry because it hurts and learns not to do that is a baby who's learning sensory motor learning, which is what a baby should be learning. So when we think about really young children, that's what we need to think about. How can we help them learn to themselves, to control themselves, to explore, to kind of explore their bodies, to explore objects, to chew on objects, to do things that are really real, and then to connect with people and to learn about give and take, cause and effect, relationships, comfort, etc., and attachment with people.
Who needs apps when you've got toes, maybe? Diane Levin, please stand by with me here in Boston. Ari Brown in Austin, Texas. Dimitri Christakis in Seattle. We're talking about screen time for babies and toddlers. Elmo from Sesame Street here, popular among the young. Like a preschooler, he doesn't know how to pronounce certain words and sings. The celebrities, Alicia Keys here with Adam Sandler. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about screen time for babies and toddlers. TV, apps, video, online games, lots of options. It seems like everybody's doing more and more of it, but what's actually okay or good or not? Here's a little bit of the preschool animated TV series Pocoyo about four-year-old boy, animal friends, lots of dancing and parties.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning.
Now get out of bed. Do your morning exercises and also get dressed. Now it's time for
Dr. Ari Brown is with us this hour from Austin, Texas, pediatrician, lead author of Media Use for Children Under 2, the big report from the American Academy of Pediatrics that came out discouraging screen. It was passive TV viewing, passive screen viewing for children under 2. Well, a lot more apps since then. Dr. Dimitri Christakis is with us from Seattle and the Seattle Children's Hospital there. He's been thinking a lot about those apps. So has Diane Levin of Wheelock College, professor of early childhood development. They're all with us. Liz is calling from Sharon, Massachusetts. Liz, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an 11-month-old daughter, and I just have hopefully a quick comment and a question about screen time as kids get older. We've, you know, kind of read the recommendations and studies and done our best to limit the amount of screen time. We know we use a little bit of actually that Color Club TV show that you featured earlier to kind of keep her focused while we do things like clip her fingernails. We use Skype to talk to her grandparents. But at the same time, it's easy to see that she just loves screens. She will do anything to get her hands on somebody's cell phone. We don't watch a lot of TV ourselves, but we have laptops. So, you know, it's hard to keep them insulated from it entirely. And I guess I would ask, you know, with that in mind, as babies kind of grow into toddlers and kids, how do you, you know, what limits and strategies, you know, could people, experts, recommend to, you know, keep from becoming too addictive and to keep them from becoming too obsessive with it?
It's a great question, Liz. Thank you very much for your call. Ari Brown in Austin, Texas. I've seen this. Infants just ravenous to get hold of that cell phone or that iPad. There's something about the technology that I don't know if it's for every young child, but certainly I've seen plenty of it. What about Liz's question on how to, like, keep that appetite under control?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're right that, like I said, I mean, even the youngest child, if they're in the same room and the parent is turned on the TV for their own program, even if it's not for the kid and it's not developed, you know, it's not something that's going to engage a child, even to the news, the child will look up every 30 seconds to look at that screen. So no question, it is addictive and kids are glued to it. But I love that Liz is using it for, you know, nail clipping and, you know, moments like that. It's hilarious.
One of those precarious infant exercises, nail clipping.
Right. Yes. You know, and so you know, it is true. We discourage screen time. There are moments and it's going to happen and that's okay. But here's the thing is that media management plan is what I was talking to you about earlier for kids over age two is, you know, have a certain time a day. So if you're going to have your toddler watch a program, okay, fine. You know, this is their downtime. They're not taking a nap anymore. Say you have a three-year-old who's not taking a nap anymore, but you know they've had a busy day at preschool and this is their downtime. Okay, fine. Then they have, you know, 30-minute show, and then it's off. One of the things that we didn't talk about Baby First TV, which is a bit concerning, is it's a looping show. So it just keeps going and going and going. And then there's ads, which is also a thing that's concerning about TV, is that not only, you know, maybe they're not doing ad placement in the programming that's embedded, but there are definitely TV commercials. And so so that's the concerning thing, is that if you're going to have, you know, you're going to establish a media management plan, fine, your child's going to watch the content. That's the important thing. Make sure you're watching the content. And then the other is the amount of time. And so so have an established time. And when the show's over, you turn it off.
Mary Ellen's calling. Hi, Mary Ellen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I'm a pediatrician in the Metro West area.
Great.
And I just wanted to kind of weigh in on what I see every day. So I see kids and babies all day, and I definitely, I'm amazed and appalled at how powerful the draw is for whatever screen is in the room.
Yeah.
And I feel like every time a screen goes on, children, including babies, their attention totally leaves the humans and goes to the screen. And then there's, at least in my office, always a fight to get their attention back, even with a baby, and some disappointment when the screen goes off. So I just wanted to say that I see it all day, every day, over and over, every day of the week. So I think it's real. I think it's addictive. I think it's kind of scary because we don't really know where this is going. And I also think that people shouldn't have to worry that their kids aren't going to know enough about screens and et cetera, because children are exposed
to
this.
Kind of. Yes, Marianne, I hear your concern level there. Dimitri Christakis in Seattle, what about it? I mean, here you are, you're saying, well, but there are good apps for the very young, but are they a net plus? I mean, there is the world out there. There are all the objects in it. It did, as you say, in all of our evolutionary histories, suffice to help us develop, and maybe that means it's the better medium for our development still. Dimitri, are you there? Oh, we just lost that line. Diane Levin, what do you say?
I think it's a real legitimate concern that's being expressed that I've come to give it a kind of nickname, problem-solving deficit disorder, that when children get used to following someone else's program, the screen, and when as soon as they see a screen, they know everything's going to be taken care of for them. They don't need to do anything. They just watch. You turn off the screen, and often many kids have problems. That's when families end up having fights. That's when there's – or kids just say they're bored. They don't know what to do, and the more then they want screens even more. Mm-hmm. And the next time the screen comes on, they jump at it even faster. And more, that's when they feel content. That's where they feel peaceful. They need the screen to feel – okay.
I mean, the irony is, you alluded to this earlier, many of them will see their parents using screens in a rather similar fashion.
Exactly.
Lots of adults are nearly
exactly
addicted.
We're somewhat comatose when we're using them. But when they're doing it, it's following someone else's program. They're not learning how to create their own, how to become engaged. You know, some people have said there are benefits to boredom. I don't know if I always agree with that way of saying it, but it kind of helps one think about it, that saying, what can I do now? You know, even for babies to just kind of lie there and kind of gradually discover their toe or whatever is really is really useful to learn about that peacefulness and seeing that it leads somewhere.
Dimitri Christakis in Seattle, I think we've got you back now. Here's a set of 10 toes and here's an iPad with an app on it. Why not go to the toes? If the app may not even be developmentally appropriate, if an infant or toddler may not even really understand what's being represented by that visual? Is there really an advantage, or are we just all screen and app obsessed now, and so we impose it on infants, toddlers, even if it's not a good thing?
So I apologize. I was cut off, and I'm not sure what
that's all right.
Discussion I've missed. But I surely do not mean to suggest that anything that we can do for our young children is better than real live human interaction. It surely is not.
Then why go there?
Why go there? It's a fair question. So I have two answers to that. The first is that if you look at studies that we've done, the typical preschool child today in the United States watches about 4 hours of TV a day, and they're only awake for about 12 hours a day. So they're spending about 30% of their time in front of a screen. That itself is alarming and should give us pause. But as an epidemiologist and public health expert, we frequently engage in what we call harm reduction. And harm reduction essentially says that we recognize that certain behaviors are intractable, and we try to minimize the harm associated with them. So one of the things we've done in our research is shift from trying to reduce the exposure to screen time, even though that's vitally important, to try to make the experience itself less harmful and possibly even beneficial.
By going to apps instead of passive television viewing, is that what you mean?
Correct. So I would argue that time spent with the parent who says, I absolutely need some time to myself, it certainly should be less than 4 hours a day. But even if it is that they need some amount of time to collect themselves so they're able to engage their child more developmentally appropriately, yes, I would say that a well-designed app is in my opinion, much more preferable than passively sitting in front of a Baby Einstein video.
But why not a pile of blocks on the living room floor or the bedroom? I mean, you seem to be accepting a diminished developmental experience simply because it's prevalent.
No, I hope I'm not suggesting that. I'm we're doing experiments now to test whether, in fact, apps are fundamentally different from blocks. They are certainly in their dimensionality, although even that's going away because there are now blocks that can, in fact, be placed on top of iPads and make essentially virtual puzzles. So even the three-dimensionality is going away. No, I'm speaking as a scientist, and I must admit that with respect to apps versus toys, I have a certain amount of equipoise. It's not entirely clear to me that they are damaging, particularly if they're not used in excess. So what I say to parents is the same thing that I would do with my own children if I still had young children, which is allow in discrete amounts apps. Keep in mind, again, because we keep talking about apps and I have to repeat what I said before, these things aren't all the same. What about reading to your child on an iPad? That surely is going to be happening in the near future. I mean, it's happening now, but Amazon sells more electronic books than paper books. The reality is that children of tomorrow will be reading with their parents on an iPad. That clearly is not an experience that we should be telling parents to avoid, in my opinion. So I just think we have to be very cautious about giving the message to parents that all screens under the age of two are bad. It's not, in my opinion, likely to be borne out scientifically, and it does a disservice to parents by having them feel bad or guilty about any amount of screen time when we know that they're not all the same.
Diane Levin, reading on iPad versus books.
Right.
It sounds natural in the world that we've created, not natural in the literal historic sense.
I think it's great. We're discussing the complexities of the issue, and it's very complex, and there aren't simple answers. Another example, when we think about iPads, I've been hearing of more and more babies that see pictures in a magazine and start pushing on the pictures.
Is that a problem? Does that represent a misunderstanding of the world they actually live in?
I think it's good to see babies trying to figure out how the pictures work. But I think if the adult doesn't understand anything about babies and what might be going on, it can make the world more complex. It can make their understanding of books harder. I also, as more and more iPad books for children do all kinds of other things. They talk. They make noises. Children pay more attention to pushing the buttons and the noises than to the print, which they're supposed to start paying attention to. Looking at those funny squiggles. What do those funny squiggles do? You know, they don't. So I just wonder, in the long term, we need research to see what does having books that entertain on iPads do that avoid from looking at pictures that give you meaning and then looking at the funny squiggles that go with the pictures. How is that going to change over time? So I think we really are at a time where the more we know, the easier it's going to be to answer some of these questions. But I think, again, for parents, simplicity and having rituals and routines with their kids and having some of the old-fashioned things are really important in the midst of all the complex things that are going on.
Time for insight in a changing reality. So much digital in the midst of it. Marissa in Sheridan, Wyoming. Marissa, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just say two things. One is that I feel it's very, very important for all humans, not just young children and toddlers, but all human beings to continue to value and develop our relationship to our bodies and to our physical relationship to the earth. And my problem with a lot of screens, and especially for young people, is that it focuses our attention more and more on our vision and our eyes, and we have less and less of a kind of interaction with the landscape, with using our entire hands, with playing and building things that are tactile,
yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like that's something that all humans, and I have felt in my own life, something that I've been working as an adult to actually come back to more and more. I feel even for myself, it's something, I'm 32, I saw a shift happen in my own way of being in the world once the internet and computers came into my life. I remember.
Let alone for a 3-month-old. Marissa, forgive me, but our time is short. Ari Brown, is it a giant experiment we're running? I mean, the sort of super omnipresence of screens is a quite recent development, and our children are getting plunged into it in a hurry. When are we going to know, or will we even pause to think, given that everyone's adopting them, whether this is a net gain?
Well, you're right. We are raising digital natives, and we're just tourists. So, in some ways, our kids are teaching us, and this is the reality of the world, and we are really trying to catch up with it. And so the good news, and the thing I'm really excited about, is there's a whole lot of interest in this topic. And so, you know, as a pediatrician and coming from the American Academy of Pediatrics, it feels good to know that there are a lot of other people really interested in this topic, because you know what? We do need to devote some research dollars to this question and really find out.
I hope you will rev up those research engines soon. There is a ton of curiosity in the world about the net effect of all this. It is so deeply evident in our lives and the lives of even the very youngest. Dr. Ari Brown in Austin, Texas, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Dimitri Christakis in Seattle at Seattle Children's Hospital. Dr. Christakis, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
And Diane Levin, professor of early childhood development at Wheelock College. So wonderful to have you today, Diane.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, tomorrow in this hour, public shaming and social media. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.